Friday, warming up for GCN Team Ollie on the Zwift Racing League. Welcome to the GCN Show.
Welcome to the GCN Show. Coming up this week, the UCI is banning expensive bikes, and we are all for it. We will be going into the details of the new price caps and talking about what it means for track, road, and you.
We've also got a load of rubbish e-bikes in Ireland, the return of Taylor Finney, how President Macron is using his power to influence pro racing, and why the Dutch government is urgently trying to change the behaviour of cyclists. This week in the world of cycling, we learnt that while Si is training hard and in great shape on the bike ahead of Seven Gravel, his pull-ups still need a little bit of work.
Oh, he's like, yeah! Right there. Oh, that was amazing.
What have you got to say for yourself?
I mean, that's quite good, actually, and I'm quite proud of myself.
For none.
Well, almost one. We also learned last week that Albert Within-Philipsen put out some insane watts en route to 8th place at Amstel Gold Race on Sunday. Still just 19 years of age, he had an actual average power of 302 watts for over 6 hours. That's normalised to 365.
Not too shabby, those numbers, are they? We don't know his exact weight, but he can't be more than 70 kilograms, we don't think. Remco Evenepoel lived up to his billing as favourite for the race by winning the men's for the first time in his career.
Yeah, he said it was in his top 8 victories, which sounds like a fairly lukewarm endorsement of the prestige of Amstel Gold. Although, I mean, if I'm honest, it wouldn't have been in my top 8 wins either.
Is that because you don't have any?
Exactly, yes.
Meanwhile, Paola Blasi took a surprise win in the women's Amstel Gold Race after a super impressive long-range solo attack.
Yeah, and what makes it even more remarkable is that she only turned pro less than a year ago. In fact, she was only called up to the squad the day before the race because her teammate fell ill.
Yeah, quite the twist of fate for her, really, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Finally this week, we learnt that the UCI is about to make some huge changes to the equipment rules in cycling and, as we said earlier, we are all for it.
Yeah, so the UCI are getting involved in ridiculously expensive cycling tech. Now, we are going to want your thoughts on this, so get poised to get involved in the comments section.
Now, to clarify, at the moment, this only relates to track cycling, but before we get onto those new rules, we should first clarify the previous ones. The UCI had already implemented rules which stated that any piece of equipment used at the track racing in the Olympics should be available to the public, or in their words, commercially available.
Yeah, now that was in an effort to, well, not level the playing field, but at least reduce some of the disparity between rich and poor cycling nations. So essentially, you can't just throw money at developing exclusive top secret tech like Team GB.
Amongst others, yeah. Now, those rules on equipment being available to the public are the same in road racing too, we should point out, where we would also say they're more effective.
Yeah, because national track teams took advantage of the grey area of those rules, didn't they? So, kind of following the letter of the law, but not the spirit of it, you might say.
The spirit of the law.
The spirit of the law, which is similar to the spirit of gravel, isn't it, really? Now, some federations would make their revolutionary new bike or wheel set or skin suit available only on a bespoke website, but for a limited time. In fact, urban legend has it that British Cycling once had a helmet that was put up for sale in one bike shop for one morning in a remote part of Wales.
I heard that one, yeah, and unfortunately, the helmet was a commercial flop. They didn't sell a single one,
no,
surprisingly.
Who'd have thought of it? And that was in spite of it being incredibly successful in helping them to win, like, a tranche of Olympic medals.
On other occasions, the product would often sell out very quickly, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Sell out.
Yes, yeah. And they'd also sometimes have a massive minimum order quantity, so tell potential buyers as well it was a multi-year waiting list.
However, in all cases, it was still enough for them to meet the UCI's criteria then stated in the rules.
Yeah, now, that strategy will not cut the mustard for the LA Olympics, though. Now, not many people seem to have picked up on this yet, mainly because it's tucked away on the tech regulations part of the UCI website and there hasn't been a public press release. But Ollie Bridgewood noticed.
He noticed, didn't he? Yeah. Apparently, it's all he could talk about at a party he went to at the weekend.
Yeah.
No, we're only joking, of course. He didn't get invited to a party.
No,
he didn't invite Ollie.
No.
Anyway, here's what the new regulations say. Firstly, equipment used in LA needs to continuously comply with requirements of commercial availability, i.e. it can't just sell out, never to be made available again.
Yeah. Secondly, there is to be no minimum order quantity, and any purchase has to be delivered within 90 days.
Thirdly, the equipment has to be used and inspected in 2027, so a year in advance of the Olympic Games. This is to prevent federations using prototype equipment at the Olympics, or indeed just before it. The old rule stated that equipment should be commercially available no later than 12 months after its first use in competition.
Yeah, these are great rules, to be honest with you.
I'd say so.
Really good rules, yeah. Slightly boring, but great. Fourthly, though, and most importantly, the UCI has introduced some reasonably aggressive price caps, okay? So frame sets will be limited to €12,500.
Reasonably aggressive.
Reasonably. Wheel sets at just €8,000. Handlebars, €1,500. Helmets, €700. And skin suits at €1,000.
A grand for a skin suit.
Yeah.
Now, that a €12,500 frame set cap may not sound particularly aggressive, but given that the Lotus frame set used by Team GB recently retailed at £25,000, the Factor bike that was used by the US team at a ridiculous retail price when first used, and that Toray VIZU TCM2...
Oh, yeah, that one.
That
yeah.
one. Used by the Japanese squad, which retails for over $100,000.
Ooh.
Then you realise it is going to have quite a significant impact on the sport.
Yeah, the new cap will also mean that Filippo Ganna and his Italian teammates won't be able to use the 3D printed Pinarello Bellide that he used for his hour record. Although, fortunately, the run-of-the-mill bog-standard carbon one actually retails for €12,500 on the nose.
Handy,
so
no.
That one will be okay.
Be okay. The caps on wheels, helmets and skin suits are also reasonably generous,
yeah,
as you heard, but will still mean that much of the equipment previously used will now not meet the new regulations, and a lot of handlebars are going to fall foul in particular.
Yes. Now, potentially, they might not fall foul if the price tag miraculously drops.
Yeah.
Which is a distinct possibility.
I'd say it's going to be like the January sales for cycling equipment, isn't it? Like 50% off, get them while stocks last.
Yeah, although stocks have to last because they're not allowed to sell out.
The new rule side. Now, we really want to applaud the UCI for taking this new stance. They take their fair share of flak, some of it warranted, much of it not, but this really feels like a step in the right direction, and in particular, actually, for track racing.
Yeah, why? Because it's boring and no one cares. No, I'm kidding. I am kidding, right? No, I'm
comments
kidding.
Comments are wild.
What, three people going to notice? No, I'm joking again, right? Importantly, if you, in track cycling, rather, you have to ride for your country,
yeah,
don't you? So if you are talented enough as a road rider, a mountain biker, a cyclocross rider, gravel racer, you'll be scouted and end up on a professional team. Mm. Like, talent does rise to the top. And at that point, you'll have access to the best equipment, no matter what your nationality.
Yeah, just because you're good enough.
Yeah, although we should say it's definitely harder from some nations in some parts of
still
the world
harder,
than others. Yeah.
But more possible on the track,
exactly,
at least up until now, because the track, it is a different beast.
Yeah.
You could be the most talented rider on the planet, but if your federation doesn't have much funding, you're not going to be able to compete against the best. And that, stating the blooming obvious, is brutally unfair.
Yeah, especially for the Olympics, which should, more than any other event, be a test of human performance rather than who has the deepest pockets. So the likes of Great Britain, Australia, Denmark and others, I mean, they've been locked in an arms race, haven't they? Spending millions on equipment and its development in order to give themselves the best chance of Olympic medals. An arms race, not a legs race, Dan.
Yes, that's what it's been.
Yeah.
Great jokes, I
Thanks.
Think.
That's why I'm really fair, because I wouldn't win an arms race.
No, I get that impression as well. So, anyway, these new rules from the UCI do go some way to taking it back to human performance rather than the battle of the aerodynamicists and the engineers in the background. Could the UCI have gone even further? Absolutely. Will they go further in the future? I reckon quite possibly.
Yeah. Now, the question that remains is to whether or not they'll implement anything similar in road racing.
And we think that's slightly less likely, don't we, for the time being at least. Most teams now do have access to very fast equipment. Is there a disparity? There is, but it's not huge, and it means that most riders with enough talent are riding on equipment that allows them to compete on a relatively level playing field on the road.
There is also much more sponsorship money from bike manufacturers on the road, isn't it? So they pay those huge sums because they get a return on their investment. Now, you could argue perhaps that it might be even more beneficial if the top pros rode incredibly fast on equipment that isn't the best of the best, but most manufacturers seem to want to showcase their latest and greatest bikes and equipment.
Plus, we're not aware of any products being used in the world tour right now that would fall foul of these maximum prices, apart from aero bars, I think we decided.
Aero bars are the only things I could find, yes. Now, second only to chamois tyres that we talked about last week, I think the aero bar is one of the least sexy products in cycling, for me, anyway. Now, would it help normal cyclists if the UCI did put a price cap on the road cycling? At face value, you'd think no, but if they did put a cap on tech, at least for World Tour pros, would it help to stop this super premiumisation effect where if someone sells aero socks for €1,000, for example, looking at you, Sokolian, then it makes €100 socks actually seem comparatively cheap?
True. But is it the UCI's place to get involved in the price of equipment for normal people?
Well, again, you'd think no, right? That sounds like some fairly serious overreach. But I did have a look on the UCI website, okay?
Just like Ollie.
Yeah. I mean, it was a fairly boring half an hour. It says, interestingly, it does say, promoting and nurturing everyday cycling is a core pillar of the UCI strategy, and the UCI is working hard to ensure that elite cycling acts as a catalyst to inspire even greater mass participation and get many more people using their bikes as part of their everyday lives. Mm.
Well, this would be one way to help.
It would, wouldn't it?
Would any bike brands care, though?
Well, I should imagine Sokolian would probably care, because I suspect that would be a bit of a hammer blow to their aero sock business. Colnago, meanwhile, I don't think they would care, would they?
No, I think I agree with that as well.
Yeah.
Right, we'd obviously love to get your thoughts on this. What do you think of the new rules from the UCI for track racing? Do they go far enough? Perhaps you think that the development of equipment is half the fascination of the sport. I mean, after all, that Lotus bike that Chris Boardman used at the Olympics back in 1996 is one of the most famous bikes of all time. Actually, probably got quite a few people into the sport in the first place.
I seem to remember reading a newspaper headline at the time that said it cost £4,000.
Oh, really?
That bike. Yeah, I say reading a newspaper headline. I think I was 9, so that's unlikely that it was a newspaper headline. But anyway, nevertheless.
Might have been on TikTok.
I don't know why that was quite that funny.
No, it probably wasn't.
Anyway, sorry. Should, though, the UCI do something similar in road racing to lessen that barrier of entry? Let us know in the comment section down below. I think there's going to be some interesting takes on this one.
I'm very much looking forward to reading the comments this week.
Yeah.
Right. I always do, by the way. Every week I look forward to
this week. This week's going to be a good one.
Right. Just before we move on then, we wanted to tell you about two new additions to our One Day Classics prints. I've actually got one of them down here. Give me a second. There we go. This is La Doyenne, which is taking place this coming Sunday. I've also got another one for the final monument of the season, which comes in October in Italy. That's the Race of the Falling Leaves.
Yeah, so like the previous prints, they're available in A3 and A4 size and come framed, as you can see here. And by the way, if you've already bought one and have it pride of place on a wall in your house or your garage or your plane cave, we'd love to see them. So head to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader and upload your photos there. Maybe we'll showcase a couple next week.
I thought we could, yeah.
Yeah.
If you haven't already bought one and you think you might like to make a purchase, simply scan the QR code that should hopefully be on screen right now, or head to shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com, which is where you'll find all our other merchandise as well.
Could be like GCN Cribs, that, couldn't it? But like showcase your amazing house or apartment, or like me, maybe a pain cave, so awful people are worried for my health.
Oh, there was a lot of interest in your pain cave from our Strive versus Survive video.
I mean, there is a story to be told there, Dan.
Well, let's leave that for another time.
And now it's time for Cycling Shorts.
Cycling Shorts now, and we're going to start with the news that e-cargo bikes are a load of rubbish in Ireland. Or rather, they're collecting loads of rubbish in Ireland.
I mean, it's a great joke, Si. It really is.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
Thanks. Yeah.
That aside, a waste firm in Dublin has started using the Vok four-wheeled bikes, like Si tried last year, to collect rubbish in the inner city. And apparently, it's not just Dublin. Other towns also have similar rubbish bikes.
Yeah, and it's the only time, Dan, that I will be looking forward to more rubbish bikes.
Let's leave that there now.
Yeah. In some racing news, last week, Taylor Finney announced that he is making a comeback just over 6 years after retiring from his career as a professional cyclist.
Rather than going back to road racing, though, he's actually aiming to make the US Team Pursuit squad ready for the 2028 Olympics, which are, of course, being held in LA. By that point, he's going to be 37 years old. Old by cycling standards, but then again, the likes of Michael Mirko and Kirsten Wild have both won Olympic medals on the track at an even older age than that.
Wowzers. Now, it is going to be a great story to follow, isn't it? Mm. Taylor has always been a super talent. Track racing, I think, was his first love.
It was.
But you do wonder how much 6 years away from top-level cycling would have affected him, particularly as since his retirement in 2019, cycling has got way quicker and way harder.
Yeah, and you hear that all the time from the people that have been in the sport for that duration, don't
you?
I mean, it's kind of what's been putting me off making a big comeback out of retirement, if I'm honest, Si.
I mean, to be fair, Dan, you've had four big comebacks on GCN at least. Only Rocky has more than you.
That is true, actually, as was pointed out in the comments recently. Well, another interesting bit of racing news now, though, is that last week, Eurosport Spain were reporting that President Macron of France had got involved in the biggest cycling transfer story of the year. Possibly of the decade, I'd say, this one.
Yeah.
Where the Tadej Pogačar's UAE Emirates team could poach the hottest prospect in racing, which is, of course, young French hope Paul Sexas.
Yeah, now, we should say that the story has been widely reported and also widely disputed, but what gives it some credibility is that Macron has prior form in this arena, hasn't he? Having allegedly intervened, I say allegedly, I mean, apparently he has, in keeping Kylian Mbappe at Paris Saint-Germain. Mbappe said that Macron phoned him up.
That's corroborated.
So kind of alleged, but one of the two parties involved said it happened.
Okay. You know what? If he can stop Paul Sexas from going to UAE Team Emirates XRG, I'm actually all for it. I mean, I think having Sexas stay at Decathlon is really good for cycling, good for the sport, and it's good for France too. And I'm okay with all of that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, here in the UK, right, the Bradley Wiggins effect from winning the Tour de France with Team Sky was very real, wasn't it? It catapulted the sport into another level.
It did. And, yeah, we also retired that very same year.
We did, yeah. The sport went to another level and we left it.
Yeah.
Anyway, here's an interesting piece of news from the Netherlands now, right? Cycling utopia, of course. Countrywide, 27% of all journeys there are taken by bike, which is amazing. However, as you might expect, with such vast numbers of people cycling and so much, casualty statistics are also quite high.
Quite high and also on the rise. So according to road safety group Veiligheid NL, 81,000 cyclists reported to a hospital accident and emergency department in 2025. That's 9% more than the year previous, but 25% more than a decade ago.
Yeah, now, the number of crashes on regular bikes has apparently remained constant. So the rise is due to e-bikes and more specifically, older people on e-bikes.
Yeah. The upshot, though, is that the government wants to change cyclist behaviour, going from a nation who famously shunned bike helmets to one where people embrace them instead.
That's right. Now, we're going to come back to that, aren't we, in coming weeks, because there's a lot to unpack there, I think. Now, meanwhile, some good news coming from the USA, where a bill was passed in Colorado which now makes it illegal for a car driver to block a bike lane, which is a small but positive piece of progress.
Similarly, but in the same bill, the state will no longer talk about road accidents, but rather crashes. Again, small, but incredibly significant. The idea being that by using the word accident, it implies it was unavoidable and that blame is passed from driver over to victim.
Yeah. Now, this is really important, right? Because once you know this, you kind of can't stop seeing it everywhere. But the quote in the article where we found this piece on gives a really good illustration of why this is important. So when a plane crashes, we don't call it an accident. We demand answers and we demand that it doesn't happen again. So this bill asks Colorado to hold car crashes to the same standard. It's a plane crash, not a plane accident. Therefore, it's a car crash and not a car accident. You get it?
Got to agree with that, really, haven't
you? You do, really, don't you? Yeah.
Right, some tech news next. According to Electric, Giant are poised to launch e-bikes with semi-solid-state batteries. This is something which, to be honest, doesn't mean much to either of us. However, we are told it would mean lighter, safer, more powerful, longer-lasting batteries with better performance in low temperatures too, which does sound quite good.
I mean, that does sound good. If true, it sounds good. Right, we are going to finish Cycling Shorts now by announcing the winners of the HJC Bellis 2 helmet giveaway. And then we've got a brand new giveaway coming up afterwards.
Oh, yes, got a new one. All right, first up then, the three lucky winners of the HJC Bellis 2 helmet are Martin Gibbs, Sepp Lorasens, and Michalis Kasapakis.
Yes, well done to you three. If you haven't already heard from us, you will do soon, unless there happens to be two of you or more that are going to the competition, in which case you may still be disappointed, but we will be in touch. Anyway, right, if you didn't win, you've got another chance now, because this time we have a Wahoo Element Bolt 3 head unit up for grabs, and this is my go-to head unit for daily riding. It's the smallest and the lightest Wahoo. For most of the time, I'm happy to forgo a larger screen, a battery and a few other features for most of my daily riding, for that little neat compact.
I've been using the same one, Si.
Have you?
I've been using a mapping feature quite a lot this last weekend.
Really?
A couple of great gravel rides. Anyway, back to the giveaway. Anyone can enter this particular one. There's no territory restrictions. And you've got until Friday, the 1st of May, to enter. You'll find a link in the description below. Just click on that. You'll be taken to a page that's going to give you all you need to know on how to enter.
Yes. And I think all that leaves for us to say is good luck.
Good luck. Next up, hack forward slash bodge of the week. We're actually going to start with a comment that was left underneath last week's show about one of last week's hack stroke bodges. I think we misread the room here, Si. I don't know if you read these comments.
I did, yeah.
Jay Relford put, for those of us who don't get free high-end bikes from sponsors monthly, we have to take extraordinary measures to ensure our nice things stay nice. You don't have to understand it to appreciate it. This is a beautiful hack, and I wish I'd done that instead of mutilating my car to add a trailer hitch. For those of you who don't remember, this was the person who'd sort of adapted their rear seat headrest so that they could put a through axle through, the bike fitted neatly into it, and they didn't have to take the back wheel out or anything.
Yeah, absolutely fair, but can I reply and say that it's perfectly possible to stack bikes on top of each other if you use blankets to
separate
them?
That's what we do most of the time.
Yeah, and they don't scratch, they don't chip, they're absolutely fine. And if you have to fit things in your car other than two passengers and two bikes, then that ain't going to work.
No.
So, anyway, there
well,
we go.
That's told you.
Sorry, but I'm a bit like, you know, it's not about being privileged, is it? It's about, everyone's got different situations.
I think we should also point out that although we are very lucky and we get to borrow top-end bikes for periods of time, I'm devastated if one of my bikes gets a single scratch on it. I just hate seeing it.
Yeah,
and so
totally.
We do take good care of them, and in laying them in the back with blankets, as Si said, we rarely get any scratches, so that's good.
Yes, indeed.
Rarely slash never.
Yes. The same can't be said for riding on gravel, where you get stuff scratched all the time.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Makes you wince when you get a crank beaten by a stone.
Oh, yeah. Brutal. Right, should we carry on?
Yep, let's go.
Right, first up, Paolo D, a scarecrow bike. My friend found a cyclist in the mountain that got one flat tyre, and since no one had equipment to fix it, they helped him by filling it with grass so he could ride back home. The good news is he was able to ride the bike home. Probably not a happy ending for that rim, though. So this is like, it's like an infamous roadside hack, isn't it?
Well, this is so old. I first read about it in a magazine.
Yeah?
In magazine's.
Yeah,
I was thinking about that just the other day. Magazine, yeah.
Yeah, well, so we've actually got a GCN video where I tried to stuff a grass with tyre. Tyre with grass.
You're not the only one. I also did the same thing for a GCN video.
Did you?
Pretty sure. Roadside hacks.
Did you?
Yeah. Took a long time.
It
took
takes
far
a long
longer
time.
Than the video suggested it took, I seem to remember.
Yes. Yeah, it really is like an absolute desperation measure, isn't it? Particularly with modern high-volume tyres.
Well, yeah.
Take a lot longer to stuff a 32 than a 23.
Yeah, true.
You mark my words.
It doesn't look like the best place to find the correct type of grass, even.
No, it looks a bit dry, a bit scrubby, that. But anyway, right. I'm happy that it worked for this person. So, yeah, that's great, isn't it? A hack.
Next up, Steve Cuthbertson put having too many bikes. I'll read them out. He's got a lot. Two Cannondales, a Ridgeback, a Thorn Sherpa, a Moulton APB, and a Pashley Governor. I've been finding it difficult to grab the correct size spare tube when I head out for a ride. Yes, I still use tubes. I'm old. I bought some conveniently sized zipped pouches from the internet and put the correct size tubes and some tire levers in each one and label them. Hey presto, I can now grab the relevant tube, throw it in my saddlebag, and head out for a ride or an Audax. Hack or what?
I mean, that is...
I like this one.
That is very cool. You will need an enormous saddlebag to fit those in.
You don't think it's going in the pocket?
He said he's put it in a saddlebag.
Oh, did he? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but...
Like I said, I often read things out and don't listen to myself.
Yeah, no, so for a certain type of person, that's absolutely amazing, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yeah, ongoing hack.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I have to say hack, even though it would pain me to carry such an enormous pouch on every single bike.
Right.
I mean, what I might have done instead is buy four different saddlebags.
Crikey.
Well, would you not? Like, I mean, that pouch is probably going to be a few quid. Like a saddlebag's only a few quid.
Isn't it? Are you sure we're not just out of touch with the cost of saddlebags in 2026?
Well, I haven't looked at the price of saddlebags in 2026, I'll be totally honest.
Last time I paid for a saddlebag was a Caramore one purple back in 1994.
Must have lasted a long time, man.
No, but then I came into saddlebags after that.
When did you get your first freeze?
I don't remember. I might be lying here. I think I might have made a further purchase before the free ones came rolling in.
Anyway, there we go. No, I think that's cool. That is super neat. I like the carbon fibre effect of your pouches. So, yeah, go on then. That's a hack as well.
Okay.
Safety Sam sent this next one in. Not sure why, Safety Sam. Old tea towel to protect new bike. Seen outside my local supermarket, an old tea towel protects the frame from the bike stand. Not my idea, but I was impressed. There you go.
I mean, I just don't feel like this takes a genius.
No. But you know what? Like, I mean, it blows my mind that someone has brought a tea towel to a bike stand. But then I guess... Partly, it blows my mind that someone would lock up their pride and joy
outside the supermarket
because, you know, it might go walkabout, particularly because it looks like it's got a very puny lock wrapped around it.
It looks like it's specifically for the shops, though, with the pedals.
But I know, but you know what I mean? Like, that lock, you just be like, looks like if you looked at it funny, it would probably break.
Yeah, very true. I'm going Bodge, actually.
I think I might go Bodge then, yeah. It's a really nice bike.
I don't really know why I'm going Bodge, and I'm also already afraid of what the comments say next week. But
In part, we could say it's a Bodge because one part of the bike has been protected with a tea towel, but another part of the bike is resting fully against the metal pole. So,
there you go.
You know, even if that worked, it's been poorly executed. I think we can say that.
I like that. We now feel like we have to justify our points just in case now. Hugh Williams, clean but thirsty, seen outside a gym swimming pool in Birmingham. Classic bike with jaunty handlebars and off-wheel mudguard arrangement utilising bottle cage, a hack of wordly proportion. Sure, I can't even say that.
No, I mean, this is quite a looker, isn't it?
Yeah. I put this inside because you remember last week I said that I'm sure it was a fashion when I was very young, 40 years ago, that the bars remained in the same direction as they were supposed to be, but turned upwards like that. That's the only reason I put it in, really.
There you go. Well, yeah, I mean, that is it. For podcast listeners, that is a old school looking steel Peugeot. Very nice looking town bike. A bit rough around the edges, perhaps, with, the drop handlebars turned up so the brake levers are pointing towards you. Do you know what? Some guy rode towards me on the bike path yesterday.
That mudguard is quite amazing, isn't it?
It is. He was holding on to, essentially, the brake levers like that. I saw it in real life.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, I've just suddenly felt very nervous that this man was coming towards me on a bike path. But anyway, we passed safely. He probably carried on his merry way. It was all good.
Right. So, Bodge for that one.
We've got a fifth
one this week, Si.
Whoa!
From Matt. He said, we recently went on a cycling trip to from the UK to France and Belgium to watch Flanders and Paris-Roubaix.
Nice.
We had the privilege of riding most of the Flanders highlights and then 19 of the pavé sections of the Roubaix course from Arenberg. To be fair, we did 910Ks over 8 days, but I got a shock one morning when I awoke to the sight of my mate's seat. He'd had enough of the cobbles, and this was his attempt for a bit more cushioning to his nether region. Fergus tried to pass it off that his seat was ripping into his bib shorts, but I don't believe him one bit.
Wowzers. So this is a Bontrager saddle with what looks like
a
wound dressing.
Yeah.
Yes, stuck on either side of the cutout. I mean, that's going to last 2 seconds.
If you're listening to this, you can't see. It's one of those sort of plaster slash wound dressings that's got the pad down the middle. And the pad has been cut in half. And one bit's perched either side of the gap down the centre of the saddle. It looks like it might work. Don't you think? An extra bit of padding there.
I mean, what is it, like a millimetre of padding?
Well, you need some saddles only have about a millimetre. It's like doubling it.
Yeah, maybe. I still can't help but feeling like it's trying to polish a turd, Dan. But,
yeah.
You know.
I can't help but feel that I just wouldn't ride my bike after I'd done 900 kilometres...
On holiday.
On holiday. ...of cobblestones.
Yes. You could probably find something else to do in that part of Belgium, couldn't you, for a day?
Yeah. I probably could. Just give my bum a bit of a chance to recover.
Okay. Bodge, then, we're saying.
Yeah,
your mate Fergus needs to have a word with himself, basically. Right. Thank you very much for sending in your hacks and bodges this week. We enjoy it very much. Remember that website address from earlier...
We can copy and paste it here from what you said earlier. Globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader.
That's the one. It's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you've got to do is put a witty caption in the comment section down below that relates to a photo we'll give you in just 1 second. But as always, we will start with the results from last week where... It's not simple this week, is it, Dan?
It's not, no. First up, an explanation. This is the photo that we gave you last week of some kind of karate kick going at the head of Paul Seixas, one of the stages of the Tour of Basque Country. Jesus Pascual Camino, but being Spanish-born, though not Basque, I recognise the action in the caption competition picture this week as a Basque ceremonial honorific dance called an orescu. I had to search the name up. Similar in purpose to a haka. There you go. Hmm. Learn something new every day. We've actually got 2 winners this week.
We do.
One is a caption I picked out that Si didn't understand. The other is a caption that Si picked out that I didn't understand.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go first. Winner number one this week is RC8 Rider, who put caption competition. Top riders appear unimpressed by mechanics' offer of last-minute chain wax. This in reference to Karate Kid, as I've just been explaining to Si. Wax on, wax off.
Okay, the reason I didn't get it is because, wax on, wax off was with Mr. Miyagi's hands, whereas this is a kick.
Yeah, well, I don't know if Mr. Miyagi was flexible enough to do it with the kick.
Oh, Mr. Miyagi was totally flexible enough to do it with a karate kick.
All right.
Anyway, you've lucked out, RC8 Rider, because Dan snuck that one through. My one, unbelievably, Dan doesn't like Lord of the Rings. I thought everyone liked Lord of the Rings.
I hate it.
So this, from Nessie Japan, you shall not bask.
Yeah, you see why I hate it now.
That's my best Ian McKellen impression. Gandalf.
Right.
You know Gandalf?
I've heard the name.
Anyway, congratulations, Nessie Japan. You too have won a Camelback bottle. Let us know, by the way, which caption you thought was funniest.
Yeah. Or if neither were funny, we shouldn't hand the botters out this week. Right, this week's photo comes from the podium of the men's Amstel Gold Race on Sunday. This is third place finisher Benoit Cousinofois of UAE Team Emirates XRG.
Photo. Oh, my days.
I was trying to explain to Saida what I think has happened here is that he's downed his little glass of beer, and then to prove that it's all finished, he's done that bit where you hold the boss up. There's a bit of froth left, landed on his nose. Anyway, that was the description for podcast listeners as well. I'll get you started. Crikey, that Benoit Cousinofois knows his beer.
Nice. Yeah. That's good. That doesn't need any explanation.
Nope.
You don't even need to watch any movies.
No movie references.
Brilliant. Right, if you think you can beat that, get involved in the comment section and we will pick a winner next week. Possibly 2. We're going to get told off for picking 2 winners, aren't we?
Yeah, we'll slip it through.
Yeah, all right. Maybe no winners next week to balance things out.
We have got a load of comments to read out from last week's videos before we let you know what's coming up on the channel this week. Underneath last week's show, David Fennick, despite their fierce rivalry, it was great to see that one of the first things MVDP did was to warmly congratulate Wout. He would know what it meant to him to finally win Paris-Roubaix.
Yeah, I really like that as well. Although I did also wonder whether, have they got a rivalry anymore? Like Matthew Vanderpool has won so much these days.
Yes, it's disappeared slightly in the last few years in the classics, hasn't it? Yeah.
Maybe it's coming back though. Wow, it was looking mighty good last weekend. Mm-hmm. Michael O'Brien said, with the awful state of the world at the moment, I don't watch the news anymore because it's always bad news. I mean, I feel your pain, Michael. Watching GCN always makes me feel better and more relaxed. And this is due to the presenters, who are obviously all friends. Thanks, fellas. Yeah, that's cool, isn't it?
Yep. Phil8697, best nugget yet, guys. We haven't thought of a nugget. Anyway, well done, Lorraine. Just shows what a simple but disciplined training plan can do for our health.
Very true. Super cool, that, wasn't it? And then Tony Barkley said, my husband Dan and I... Not you.
No.
Love watching GCN from Brisbane, Australia. I've learned so much about cycling and the technicalities of it from watching your show, but it's also the humour, banter and the book recommendations that make me a huge fan. Stickman, I had to order it and it's awesome. My grandson loves it. So there we go. Hopefully neither you nor your grandson are traumatised from the storyline of Stickman, which, as I said last week, I find quite hard.
Quite a few comments about Stickman, including this one from Alistair White. The Stickman reading time crunch cyclist poo stick playing parent Venn diagram is a circle in our house. I feel seen.
That made me chuckle, that one. Right, then, underneath the Colnago C72 video, where Dan and Ollie were lucky enough to not only ride the bikes, but also ride the bikes in Italy in springtime, hanging out with Team UAE, Emirates, XRG. Like, I mean,
I know, it was a jolly.
Yeah, basically. Anyway, fortunately, you lot enjoyed the video as well. Ronald G. Josie said, that was one of the most enjoyable GCN videos I viewed. Props to all involved. This next comment, did you pick that one out?
I picked this one out, so I should read it out as well.
Yeah, okay.
Chris RNZ, what a stunning, beautiful piece of cycling journalism. The magical combination of Dan and Ollie aside, it's almost like an entirely new GCN production crew made this. Perfect balance of comedic moments with the soundtrack, lighting, scenery and tech to match. It's actually quite special when you guys come up with something that you can tell evokes genuine emotion in the presenters. Kudos to all involved. Best GCN video for a very, very long time. I'll put that in.
I mean, I'm laughing, but I mean, quite a lot of that rings true. To be fair, it was really good. If you've not seen it yet, do make sure you go and watch it. Our calendar of about 5 minutes in, I'm poised to put my kit on and go out, despite nursing a cold, living in rainy Manchester in the UK, and riding a cheap entry-level bike, albeit loving it. Great watch, thank you. Mm. So that's cool. That's kind of how I felt, really.
It was very good. Loads of comments underneath Ollie's video from Saturday about getting heavier to ride faster. Over 800 when I looked earlier on this morning. Quiverlin put, got to be a series. Can't have had all that effort for one 15-minute video. Great content, as always, from Donnie's favourite son.
Nice. ISO said, the thing I love about this is Ollie is living the ethos of love the process, not the results. And proof that if you do that, the results follow regardless.
He most certainly has been following the process.
He has, and I'm pretty sure he loves the results as well, though, doesn't he? Yeah.
SFS Amiga, Jesus Christ, if Ollie sets his mind on something, he goes all out. Those pull-ups were seriously impressive. And even that he improved from one pull-up to 10 in that amount of time.
Yeah. Marcus said, Connor's range of motion on the bench press is longer than my squat.
SFJX6IT, don't know what was thinner, size arms or the bench press bar.
And then Juan Piquet, this made me chuckle, Ollie has been working out all winter just to take Si and Connor to the gym and show off to them. I was half expecting him to start shouting halfway through his pull-ups, who's getting dropped now?
Yeah, he tried not to look smug, didn't he? But you just know he was.
Oh, fair play. Good job, mate.
That fair play, you know.
He's done well.
He has done very well.
Under the cycling supplements video, where I spoke to three nutritionists from World Tour squads. Mason Leonard, 69, put beet juice and asparagus and creatine equals muscle power with toilet surprises.
Cream says, great job, Dan. I really appreciate having a clear definition of important supplements from pro nutrition professionals. This was quite helpful.
Yeah, quite helpful.
Quite helpful.
And Michael said, as a 57-year-old athlete, I mainly stick to the beer and sausage sandwich diet.
Ah, that sounds like a good diet. Yeah.
Right then.
Yeah, what's coming up, Dan?
Coming up this week, starting on Thursday, this is Connor's video, saying, I hated One By, but what do I think of it now? Mm-hmm. You might remember that Connor raced for Aqua Blue. He was the first ever pro team to race on a One By chainring on the road.
Yeah. And they didn't like it, did they?
No.
They all kicked off a lot. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to know what he's got to say about that.
Yep.
I actually don't know the answer either.
I don't either. On Saturday, Si's back with another video because...
Si's back with another video.
No, Si's been...
That's my job.
I don't look at Strava loads, but a couple of weeks ago when we started our training for the Seven Gravel in Australia, I'd done some riding. I was like, right, let's see how I compare to Si. And then rather smugly, Si's done nothing. And I gave you a text and you said, yeah, probably not the best time to go off Strava. But you've been doing a detox to see how it feels, haven't you?
Yeah, so, the question is Strava toxic? And the only way I could find out whether it was toxic, other than do research, is to give it up. Mm-hmm. So I've had a... it's been very interesting, 30 days giving up Strava. I've learned a lot about myself, about other people. But no, it's cool. And then on Sunday, Connor, another one from Connor, he has been out in Italy. He's just done the Veneto bikepacking race, which sounded absolutely incredible. We've got a video about that coming soon. But whilst he was there, he decided to have a go at the world's steepest and hardest climbs. So those are the ones that felled Ollie a couple of years ago. Do you remember?
Some drama followed Connor when he was trying to do the steepest climb.
Unexpected drama. Mm. Yes. All right. Dan, nugget time.
Yeah, have you thought of something?
Well, yes, mainly just how's your training going for Seven Gravel?
Good. Helped massively by sunshine in the UK. And it looks wall-to-wall sunshine for as long as I can see on the forecast.
It does look good,
isn't
it?
On Saturday, I actually did an A to B ride, which I love. My younger son was going to have a driving lesson on MOD land about 75 k's away. So I made
75 k's?
Yeah, off-road as well. So I made a route on Strava. It was stunning. There was like one segment of about a K and a half, which I'd rather not ridden down. It was really bumpy, very overgrown, etc. But for the rest of it, absolutely stunning.
Nice.
And there's nothing like just having to get somewhere rather than having to figure out where you need to go to get enough riding in before you get home, is there?
Yeah, that is cool. Unless you're late, then that's a problem.
I was almost late, but thankfully, Lorraine, who drove Jude there, was even later.
Oh, there you go.
So I didn't get into trouble. Nice. And on Sunday, I did a couple of hours around Dorset, also mainly on gravel.
Nice.
So, yeah, I'm happy with mine. How about yours?
Yeah, very well. You know what? I'm really enjoying having a plan. So my plan was given to me by Simon Jones, who's a coach based out in Perth. Funnily enough, right, I've managed to find a little bit more time from somewhere in order to train. And so I've done a reasonable amount. I've done some pretty grim sessions. But some very nice ones as well. So I managed to do 11 hours last week, 12 the week before.
Well, if you're competing at Seven Gravel in the 40 to 45 age group, you better watch out.
That's right. Yeah, and do your VO2 max intervals and your threshold intervals and your sweet spot intervals and your A to B.
You might be overtrained by the time you get there, just crawling.
I mean, there is a risk.
Be like Gary Ford from the 96 Olympics, flying about 3 weeks later.
Yeah, no, I've got a good taper coming up.
Have you?
Yeah. Which is a shame because it's sunny, but...
Okay, how long is your taper?
I'm sort of beginning to taper now. I've got just a few...
Now?
I've got a few, like... I've been training for a long time. You've only just started.
It's 3 weeks away.
So I've got a few big sessions this week, and then I've got, like, a dummy run, so, like, 4.5 hours with 7 10-minute over-threshold intervals in to practice.
Yeah.
And then we travel.
Yeah, okay.
So you can't train, you've got to be fresh when you travel.
Well, I'm going to taper on the flight. I presume we've got first.
I mean, I'm assuming we've got first.
Yeah, you'd have thought so, yeah. If not, we'll get upgraded. Anyway, what a nugget.
If you work at Qantas, you're one of the 17 people still watching the GCN show.
The chances of that.
Please get in touch.
Still been here 45 minutes in and you work for Qantas. Imagine that would be lucky for us, wouldn't it? Right.
I imagine that.
Stop babbling on.
Yeah, all right. See you next week.